everyone. Welcome to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Monday, March 7th, 2011. My name's Greg Stanwood. I'm here along with my regular co-host, Andrew Martin. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing okay. It's a bit chilly outside, but it'll be warm in baseball weather before you know it.
So we're 1 week into the spring now. We are the Rockies record, if anybody cares, even though it doesn't mean anything too spectacular, is 5-3. With the win today being Sunday. And we're going to start off the show today with our what will hopefully become, or should probably become, sort of a regular segment that we begin with throughout the regular season, where we just talk about some of the players that are hot and cold at the moment and why we think that is. So, Andrew, do you have anyone you want to start off with in the hot category?
Well, the funny character that I like to mention, or I don't like to mention, it's funny because I'm mentioning him, Johnny Herrera.
Does that mean you don't like to mention him?
Well, I don't know. Whenever I mention him, it seems to start a big slap fight argument. So no, frankly, I don't like mentioning him.
Okay.
But, Johnny Herrera's batting 412 so far this spring. I mean, 412. It's been, you know, all of 8 games, and he has had, it looks like 17 at bats so far.
He's got 2 triples, doesn't he?
Yeah, I believe that's where his slugging's coming from. He's got all those crazy extra base hits, apparently. 2 triples, no doubles. It's kind of a funny thing to look at there, but it seemed obvious. Well, at least in my mind, it seemed obvious that Herrera was going to take one of the infield spots as likely a utility player, as the organization went ahead and traded for Jose Lopez over the offseason. It seemed that they were going to take a risk with him as a starter, which means Herrera would slide into what might be a more natural spot for him as a bench player.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he's tearing the hide off the ball, and from what we've seen out of Jose Lopez so far, this it might not be just as simple as, you know, what makes the most sense with their, you know, likely position.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at Lopez, I'm trying to find him. There we go. No, 14th. He is batting, he's batting 273 so far, and, he appears to have taken a walk, and, all of his hits have been single so far, but again, we're talking about 11 at-bats in 5
mm-hmm.
games.
Yeah.
As compared to Herrera's, a lot of numbers evade me. 6 games, 17 at-bats. Oh, I guess those numbers are updated from the game today. Well, point still stands. Herrera is out hitting Jose Lopez this early in spring training. However, it's tough to really say anything about that beyond, ooh, you're hitting better than him over 5 games. Congratulations. Lots of players hit better than lots of players over 5 games. We've all seen crappy players out hit the best players in the game over the course of 5 games,
and sometimes over the course of the entire spring. So
yeah, exactly. This really doesn't mean anything at all. So Herrera should be noted for this. He looks like he wants the job. I mean, I still stand on my mindset that he is not a starting caliber major league second baseman. That he is that he's the kind of guy who falls victim to is the wrong word. He takes strong advantage of hot streaks, and you know, credit to him. If you're gonna get hot, get hot. Get people to notice you. And when you have a strong glove, you know, win yourself the job. I'm not taking that away from him for a split second there. But when you, I don't know. The issue for me is when you look at the guys who were expecting to be starters and stuff like that, there's so rarely guys of Herrera's caliber. And I don't mean to just completely eschew the whole slappy, choke up in the bat, foul off pitches, then get a bloop single that, you know, by no logical reason should have fallen. It works, I guess, but it's the kind of thing where, do you want to count on that? You want to count on sometimes what seems to be blind luck. He's always been a non-prospect in his career, and a lot of people say, oh, well, your sabermetric evaluation, this isn't necessarily even about sabermetric evaluation. I mean, if I have a dog that pees on the rug and pees on the rug and pees on the rug, and then one day he doesn't, do I suddenly make him into a house dog that doesn't, and assume he's not going to? It's kind of a silly example there, but, you know, fool me once. It's kind of like a fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, but in the opposite direction. Will Herrera be someone who wins the starting job out of spring training and then proceeds to just fall off an over cliff because his bloop singles aren't dropping anymore. And there's a lot of good to be taken out of him. Like I said, with glove and with contact abilities, line drive rate, things like that. And he is a welcome addition to the lineup. I'm just afraid of them over-emphasizing some small things in exchange for just actual batting talent.
Well, yeah, I mean, Herrera is definitely slated to make the team anyway, at least in a utility role, and you have to wonder if, even if there's no, you know, definite conclusion that he should be starting out of the spring for some reason, you kind of get the impression that Tracy and other people in the organization are really into him right now, and it would not be unreasonable whatsoever to expect that he's probably going to be starting at second base a couple times a week. As long as he keeps up like this, at the very least. Now, of course, we know that the biggest flaw, at least from an offensive perspective, is lack of slugging. He's a singles-type hitter, or at least has demonstrated that to be kind of his game. But if he were to suddenly develop more of a skill set for hitting extra base hits, would that be enough to sort of change your opinion on his value? Is that the only thing holding him back, or are there other elements of his game that you don't like?
Well, whenever a lot of analysts see a guy who is powered almost entirely by singles, you raise an eyebrow to it because there's only so many Ichiros in the league. There's only so many guys who can really run their entire game based off of bat control singles, and you know, Ichiro had a caliber coming out of Japan when he came over to the United States. He was already a top-notch player over there, and he came over here and just continued to be a top-notch player. So with a guy like Herrera, when we saw no signs of being anything other than minor league filler and emergency call-up because of a glove, then to see him suddenly get hot, I have to say, well, that's great. It has nothing to do with the fact that he can't hit extra base hits, because I'd be okay with a low 700s OPS, because, you know, really, if you look at something like weighted on base average, which more properly values on base percentage, his numbers are all right. I don't hate them, and his batting style fits well at the top of the lineup and good things like that. And plus, if you've got a base dealer on base, you don't want to necessarily put a big slugger behind him, at least first go-round, because all you're going to need if Fowler steals as successfully as we're hoping, then all you're going to need is a singles hitter to get him across all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I just worry that whatever genie lamp he rubs to get, you know, all these hits and all these hot streaks, that it's going to run out, and there's no real discernible skill sets to fall in behind that aside from defensive skill sets, which isn't a bad thing, but we had Omar Quintanilla long enough. We don't really need another one.
Sure. So
it's more just the issue of, I don't want to put too much emphasis on a guy who might just be getting an unreasonably long good luck spell.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to pick Jordan Pacheco as my pick for a hot player because, starting last year when I first started to, you know, learn and study the minor league system a little bit more closely, I had no idea who he was, but I followed him ever since we saw him perform well in last year's spring, and of course he's come a long way. He had a breakout year at every level he played and then continued that into the off season, and then now, you know, he was purchased onto the roster to keep him safe from the draft, and now, he by no means, from a depth perspective, when you look at our catching depth of the organization, should really be considered to be in contention right now for the backup catcher spot. And, you know, it's too early to tell if he really is or not, but he's, at the very least, what he has done with his consistency is cement himself into a corner of that depth where he's not really going to fall out of favor or out of the view just because of the people who are above him. I guess a less convoluted way of saying that would be he's behind a lot of people, but the way he's been performing is going to prevent him from being you know, forgotten about or becoming invisible based upon the willing Rosarios and so forth. So yeah, I'm really excited about watching him continue, and I don't think that there's really much of a chance that he's going to wind up on the team to start, but, you know, at the same time, we've not seen a lot of really fantastic stuff from anybody else. And again, it's too early to really expect that. I'm not down necessarily on Jose Morales or Mike McHenry or something like that. But, you know, the other competitors are not being talked about as much as he is. And so I don't think it's going to change anything, but it's worth keeping an eye on at this point. And then since you went first with the hot segment, I'll go first with Hector Gomez as my pick for a cold player. We talked a lot about Gomez last week, so I'm not going to get into a super detailed explanation of where he fits into the organization or so forth. But the thing that's been driving me crazy with him has been the defensive element. He's made, what, it's like 6 errors in 7 games or something like that. He's been a little rough. So, you
know.
Been
a lot of rough.
Uh-huh. And, you know, he's not... he's probably not settled into the proper mindset. And I mean, it's not just because we're just getting off the off season. He's getting off 2 straight seasons of being mostly out of baseball. So you have to kind of contextualize the fact that the amount of baseball he's actually played has been relatively small compared to what you would expect. And even if he's healthy now, he's probably in a bad place just from the mental aspect and might have to relearn some focus. And some discipline out there. You know, I don't really know. I haven't seen too much of his actual play because there's not been a lot of televised stuff. But I've seen 2 or 3 of the errors that he made, and you know, it's really just a case of he's letting his mind falter a little bit. And I think that you know, if he wants to ensure that he stays as hyped as he has been, in addition to the health issues, he can't let himself fall out of favor because of something like this. So, and who did you pick for yours?
I went with Greg Smith, and I just want to look over the pitchers, because when I looked at the batters who were, you know, cold and kind of falling out of favor a little bit, I mean, most of them weren't really impact guys for the most part, for the guys that I was looking at. And if they weren't impact guys, they were guys who probably weren't going to lose their role with the team regardless of what their spring looked like, unless they got hurt. I mean, if Todd Helton does terribly during spring training, you really think he's not going to be out there at first base on opening day? I mean, same thing with, well, just any number of guys on this. So I just kind of grabbed Smith because if last season was any indication, he would probably, you know, the 7th starter in the organization, or, you know, just one of the first depth call-ups on the AAA roster. But the way his spring's looking so far, it's just, he seems to be slowly drifting down the line and, you know, losing his footing with potentially reaching the majors again. I mean, with other guys like Eric Stoltz or Billy Buckner, you know, guys like that, the organization picked up in the offseason. Smith might have already had his time in the sun with the Rockies and, you know, might not be a major league candidate at all anymore. And you know, that's kind of sad, but...
He's been kind of on a cold streak since the beginning of last year when he had a great spring and earned himself the replacement spot for Francis. The funny thing about that is... he was on the roster for most of the year, and then when they were cutting players in September to open up spots for like the Jay Paytons and so forth, it was Greg Smith over everybody else on the roster who they opted to outright. And there are other factors that go into that besides just, you know, the obvious stuff like, oh, we don't like him and he's down and he's hurt and so forth. But it's also convenience. And we have to keep that in mind, that Greg Smith was somebody who would be caught by the net automatically unless he was claimed off waivers and they could keep him another year. So that might have had something to do with it. But at the same time, any time that you're taken off a roster, it's a bad thing for your career. And at this point, you know, he didn't have the service time to leave yet. So he was forced to come back to us, and I say that like it's a bad thing, but hey, I mean, maybe he has a better opportunity here than we realize. But right now, Greg Smith's best hope right now is to land the fifth starter spot in Colorado Springs, because, you know, four of those spots are already pretty much locked for sure, we'll be down there. It'll be Clay Mortensen and Greg Reynolds. Esmil Rogers, we'll talk about him in a little bit when we start talking about Cook, but unless he takes that rotation spot, he is slated to be the pitcher down there as well. And then the fourth spot is probably going to go to Corey Riordan. I can't say that for certain because there's a possibility they'd option him back to AA for some reason, but the fact that they purchased him to protect him from the draft suggests to me that they're a little higher on him than that, and he'll probably be the fourth starter down there, leaving one spot. And Smith might have an advantage because he's a lefty, and there are no other lefties in that group of people I just mentioned. And Christian Friedrich, who would be the other person competing for that spot, right now it looks like he's going to be sticking down to AAA, so...
Triple A?
To the Tulsa Drillers. I'm sorry.
Where does Alan Johnston fit in?
Right now, he's in competition for that spot, and he is also a possibility to be put in the pen. But the pen is crowded, too. We're going to be releasing a lot of guys, and it's not just going to be...
Oh, obviously.
It's not just going to... I mean, even more than usual. We're getting a pile up there of... You know, there's often players who are just NRIs who we just let go, and we usually keep organizational guys in favor of that. But I think we could easily see 4 to 5 pitchers who have been with us the last 5 or 6 years who aren't quite at that point where they're able to declare minor league free agency yet, but they're a couple years away from it, who are going to be let go. And there could be some names in there that people have gotten to know. And I'm talking about Alan Johnson's and Andrew Johnston's and Andy Graham's and so forth, who might be displaced in favor of other players. But, you know, it's too early to tell about that because some of them are going to go to extended spring training, and we don't have to have the rosters finalized right away in the minors. They can be really creative with how they can move those around, much more so than at the majors. Okay, let's talk about Aaron Cook at this point. We don't know still really the extent of what's going to happen. There's all these different reports going around that maybe he's feeling better, or, you know, I don't know at this point, and nobody really does, if he's going to be ready to start the season. John Heyman tweeted today that he doesn't think he is, but we talked about that earlier before we started recording, and we really don't know how much value we should put into that statement. So,
well, it wasn't just his statement of Aaron Cook might not be ready to start the season. It was Rocky's disappointed that Cook didn't show up in throwing shape.
Yeah.
I think we're mixing our semantics a little bit here, John, because all the beat stuff has come out saying Cook showed up ready to go, and then it turns out then came down with inexplicable shoulder stiffness.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to make him out to be, you know,
irresponsible,
and Andrew Jones or something like that, or just whoever, Manny Corpus perhaps. It's just ridiculous. That's we have never heard anything like that of Aaron Cook, and to send out a tweet like that basically just Aaron Cook's, you know, one of those lazy guys who just coasts and whatever. He's in a contract year. He knows he's in a contract year. You think really that Aaron Cook, who's been one of the standout veteran leaders of this baseball team, would show up not ready to go unless he was, you know, there was some other undisclosed injury over the offseason? I mean, come on, John. I know you're not exactly familiar with the Colorado Rockies organization. They're not in New York. So, you know, why don't you do a little bit more research, see who's already covered this, because, no, trust me, the Denver papers do a good job of covering the Colorado Rockies. They don't need to wait for John Heyman to swoop down and, you know, put his almighty blessing on the news before they can put it out. It's just one of the more arrogant things I've heard, and I know it's just a couple little words there, but it really does paint a picture of Aaron Cook as being an unsavory character who no team should really want to be looking at too strongly, when that's really the opposite of what we know as a fact about Aaron Cook.
In regards to the rotation spot, just off the top of your head, who would you rather have? And again, we're talking hypotheticals here. If Aaron Cook is unable to be prepared to be ready to go straight out of the gate, do you move Paulino from the bullpen into the rotation, or do you bring up somebody like Rogers or some of the other NRIs or something?
Well, at the moment, there's a little bit more flexibility with someone like Rogers, so I would just as soon leave him down for right now. I guess he doesn't have to be on the big club to start the season. We have the flexibility for one last option here, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Rogers is one of the two, along with Greg Reynolds, who, because of the service time that they have in the minors, their professional time is not enough to deny them an extra option year. So they both get a fourth option. So Rogers is included in that, and yes, he can be sent to the minors without worry about waiver claims or him being able to declare free agency or something like that.
Gotcha. Oh, and so then that kind of leaves us with the other NRIs who none of them I'm terribly impressed with. And again, I'd rather not juggle roster spots because it sounds like Paulino might be pretty much going to make the team out of spring training.
Yes, because he doesn't have option years.
Precisely. So as long as we have to have him on the major league roster, unless he absolutely falls on his face the rest of spring, you know, we traded for him, and granted it was more of a let's get some value out of a guy we're about to non-tender in Clint Barmas, but, you know, what's the worst that could happen? We lose a couple games when there's a chance we lose a couple games with another guy as well, especially someone who, you know, isn't, or is more sub-MLB quality than Paulino. And Paulino has, you know, it's a small sample, but he's had a decent run as a starter, and I don't know, I think he could put it together.
Right, so you would ditch the bullpen spot for him, or and again, I'm not saying you should commit to this perspective, because a lot can happen between now and when that happens, but then you would call up somebody like Matt Daly to fill that last spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally okay with that. I mean, someone, I don't mean to just demean's not the right word, but undersell Matt Daly but he's kind of more of a, when you talk about the fungibility of a bullpen, he's kind of the example of that. I mean, he had such a hot rookie year, then got hurt, and we were able to do relatively well without him, and, you know, if he's available, call him up, and if we have to send him back down, oh well, do it again, because...
Yeah, he's kind of in that eighth spot in the pen area.
Yeah, he's not the impact kind of guy who said, oh yeah, he's definitely up there, but I guess it wouldn't hurt to have him up or whatever.
Well, people forget that even in his entire Rockies career, from 2009 when he first got the opportunity through last year when he spent a lot of time hurt, but he was up and down a little bit. But every time he's been on the team, it's been in place of an injured player. It's just so happened that there's been a lot of bullpen injuries. He wouldn't have made the team last year out of spring training if Houston Street weren't down. It just so happened that he was, and then he was able to spend a couple months up here before we optioned him down, and he was the first one we did. We just happened to have to call him back up to put him on the disabled list. So I would say that I don't know if I'm that upset about the idea of using Rogers instead. I think it should be a straight-up competition between the two, to be honest, because Paulino's already got a spot on the team. You know, we don't need to go to him specifically to be the sixth starter. We can have them both together as sort of that area. And I still don't know Paulino too well. I know only what I've seen of him as an opponent. So I'm not really the kind of person who should be making a judgment like this, but I would be interested in keeping as many options open as possible and kind of going with whoever is best to fit. But those two definitely have an advantage simply because they're on the roster already. When you start looking at Eric Stoltz or Claudio Vargas or somebody like that, it's a little bit more difficult because you have to squeeze roster space for them. And it looks like, I mean, one of the other players we could have mentioned as being hot in this first week of the spring is Jason Giambi, who is looking more and more like he's going to be given that 25th spot as a late-inning pinch hitter from the left side. And we already need to create roster space for him. So that's one spot, and maybe there will be somebody, like Rosario maybe. If Rosario goes to spring training, maybe we can throw him on the 60-day disabled list and use that spot. But it's not going to be really likely that there's going to be two or three more people that we can do that with without actually, you know, outriding somebody off the roster. So it gets a little tricky when you think about it from that perspective. So yeah, I'd probably be okay with either of them, but at this point, I honestly think my preference is that the word that Cook is finally starting to improve gets better, and over the next 2 weeks, he's able to finally get into games, and you know, even if he's a little off, you know, it's interesting. I should look this up. I wonder if we even need a fifth starter, at first, because we don't always. I'll look that up, and then you can talk about any of the other players you think might be involved in backing up. I mean, you said you're already not thrilled with the NRIs, but are there any you think that might be worth getting a look, even if it's in the offhand chance that something crazy happens with Polino and Rogers?
Well, I guess I just don't like the idea of, you know, having to use one of them, because I feel like they should be there only kind of for emergency purposes, because they all seem to be the out-of-options kind of guys that you don't, we don't really have too much flexibility with. Like, Mortensen has an option.
He's got two options, technically, because he's going to be another one of those guys who gets an extra one due to service time.
Gotcha. I'm just looking at Rocky's roster, and it only has almost as one.
Yeah, we are going to try to build one where we can put an asterisk next to that that explains that he has another one. If you click on his player card on Rocky's roster, you'll see that he we did make a note that he should get an extra one. But
should qualify for extra in 2012.
At the same time, if you're looking at non-roster people, let's say that we, I don't know, purchase the contract of Eric Stoltz. We have the room. We don't have to get rid of anybody. We're not going to feel too bad if we have to, like, designate him for assignment and let him go when Cook is ready or something like that. And so you almost are put in a better position. I mean, better in better is not the right word, because with someone like Rogers, you can just option him down. But I guess it's really not that big of a problem to worry about dropping them when the time would come. So, you know, if we did have to do it, I don't know if the flexibility is really that big of a problem, because it's not like losing somebody like that after 3 weeks would really be all that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I think more about the minor league depth we have in AAA is kind of, well, I don't know, I think about the more in catastrophic senses that, you know, we need to have a guy come up for the year, but at the same time, that's not really how it goes. These guys are rounds in a revolver that we fire off one by one until they're all gone. If someone went down, like, super long-term permanent, that's when we start wanting to look at more, less fill-in starters and more, okay, well, let's take a look at Friedrich. Is he looking ready yet? You know, things like that. And less of a, let's see who sticks when we throw him against the wall, and more, who fits more into our long-term solutions. Like, maybe they reopen the idea of trading for James Shields, things like that.
Sure. Okay, so now let's move on to some of the questions we got. Bats and Balls asks us, if all the potential breakout guys, which he lists as Ionetta, Smith, and Stewart, have breakout seasons, how well do you see the Rockies being able to keep them, or who do you think the Rockies would try to keep? Okay, so when it comes to those three players, here's how I break it down. Smith is probably the least entrenched, because going into the season, he could probably most easily be replaced by somebody else. Probably Charles Blackmon.
Yeah.
Ionetta would probably be second, and by the end of the year, he might be first on that list, because Smith is going in as kind of the default choice based upon, the fact that, you know, we don't really have a whole lot of upper tier outfield depth right now beyond Blackmon, and, you know, he would just be being slightly fast-tracked to go out of the gate right now if we were to select him over Smith. So Smith kind of lands that position inherently. With Iannetta, it's different because nobody else in the organization right now is a starting catcher at the major league level. Rosario could have been after last year, but he got hurt, and he's going to be starting slow. I mean, even if he's been healing really fast, that's great. They're still going to be really careful with him. So really it comes down to Stewart as the one who is most rigidly set in terms of the possibility of taking up the next few years, because there's not a whole lot of depth at third base down until you get to Arenado, who might even be converted somewhere else. Though I think people are growing more confident at his longevity at third base at this point. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Well, the organization has put an awful lot of, well, trust isn't the right word. They seem to have staked more into Iannetta in the sense of giving him the 3-year contract, in the sense of, you know, basically, mollycoddling is a bit too strong of a word, but I guess it's somewhat accurate, and saying, all right, fine, the job is yours, no one else is going to take it from you, and you need to go out and keep it now, as opposed to, oh, look, Miguel Olivo gets ridiculously hot, and or look, Yorvi Torrealba starts fist-pumping magical time warp singles, stuff like that. I don't know, it seems weird to say they're babying him to the position, but a lot of people have taken that stance that he is getting the position handed to him, whereas other players are having to fight for their role. And I think it has more to do with the fact that the organization sees Iannetta as the kind of guy who needs to get a head of steam built up before he really is moving. And, you know, he's been not left open to, but it just has been poor timing as well. He's been building that head of steam. He's going to have slow moments, and other guys are just getting ridiculously hot, you know, with the snap of a finger, and then he loses his playing time. And it's totally understandable. I'm not, you know, it's not a bad or good thing necessarily. Well, it's a bad thing for Iannetta. But for the organization, as long as someone's hitting, no one really cares who it is. With Stewart, though, I don't know, it seems a bit weird because he was the untouchable third base prospect kind of guy his first year or two with the organization. And then this offseason, he suddenly became a bit less untouchable. I mean, there are the talks of, you know, Gavin Floyd for Ian Stewart, and, you know, him being some sort of a package somewhere to add to other areas of weakness, but there's really no one else to replace him. You mentioned Arenado, but, and then you mentioned him potentially switching over. We've heard conflicting scouting reports about, Arenado having good hands, having wooden hands, having no range, being a big lumbering giant, being adequate at the position, and I'm not sure which to pick, but I guess I'd rather just, you know, considering the inconsistency of the scouting reports, I guess I'd rather err on the side of caution and say he should probably be at first base sometime soon here. There seems to be, there'll be an opening there in a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
But Stewart, I don't know, I'm wondering what it is that the organization sees in Iannetta that they not necessarily don't see in Stewart, but Iannetta got the contract. Iannetta got the, I guess it's maybe the fact that Iannetta's had a season. And someone pointed that out earlier, is either today or yesterday, that out of Smith, Iannetta, and Stewart, Iannetta at least has one big season to point at, whereas Stewart's had one okay season. Smith's had a lot of pinch-hitting success and then questionable results as a starter, and then Iannetta, like we said, has had one big season and then a lot of falling on his face.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, it seems like the organization, that's why they want to continue kind of babying Iannetta along, because they want to see if he can actually ever retouch that success. Whereas with Stewart and Smith are saying, hey, are you ever going to reach your potential?
Mm-hmm.
It's less of a get back to your potential and more of a, okay, get to your potential, and then we'll talk about what to do with you going forward.
Right. I see what you're saying. I still think that when you look at the just the layout of, you know, potential in inter-organization replacements, Stewart losing him would be the most would be a larger concern based upon who would be promoted in response.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on who would want to put there, because I mean, do you put Wigginton there as a full-time starter and then bring up a someone like Chris Nelson to become the new super utility guy, or do you keep Wigginton in the, you know, super utility position and bring up Nelson to be the starting third baseman? Or I'm just slotting Chris Nelson in there because he's the closest infielder to the majors, in my opinion, anyhow. I don't really think that there's anyone else who makes a whole lot of sense to call up after that. You'd have to do some positional switching, but yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess that makes sense that Stewart's the hardest to replace, at least as far as positional depth in general, that isn't just blatant minor league filler. Because right. Jose Morales has time being, you know, was starting until Joe Mauer came back in 2009. Pagnozzi at least had a hot September to go off of. McHenry is a field leader and strong defensive player. I guess we just kind of see maybe Pacheco. Well, then again, Pacheco could be in that conversation as well.
Yes.
As a potential third base replacement. Because from what we are seeing, one of our, David Ono, who is, a contributor to Purple Row.
And who has a great deal of knowledge about, the Tulsa level players.
Precisely. His commentary on Pacheco is basically that we've seen what he has now, and it's, the thing is, his ceiling isn't ridiculously high. But at the same time, it's not a bad ceiling either, but it seems that he's very close to reaching it already, and it's questionable how much more minor league time he really needs to get to where the organization had pictured him initially. So do you call him up now? Do you... I don't know. The questions don't need to be answered at this moment, thank goodness, because, you know, Stewart, Iannetta, and Smith are still with the organization, and there's no real other worries at the moment, at least depth-wise, because nobody's out for the count quite yet. Nobody's been cut. Nobody's, you know, lost their job yet. So, you know, I think they're going to – I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to give Stewart, Iannetta, and Smith all the chances they can get before it just – unless they just crater. And by crater, I mean make it just an undeniably obvious decision. You're done. We're sorry. We're moving on.
Yeah. Now, we also got a question from Jeff Aberle, who's of course a colleague of ours on the blog, and I'm actually curious about this because it's a question I can't really answer, but you probably have more insight into than I do. He asks, which evaluation of Jason Hamill do you think is closer to reality? Fangraphs Hamill, which is 3.7 WAR, or Baseball Reference Hamill, which is 1.7. So, okay, I understand what wins above replacement is, and I don't understand the differences between how each calculates it. I'm fairly certain that one has a higher, much larger input from defensive metrics, and one has lower. Is that how it works out, or?
Kind of. The way it works with Fangraphs is a FIP based WAR. FIP being the fielding independent metric, fielding independent pitching. It only measures the pitcher's value based on his strikeouts, his walks, and his home runs. The thought is that those are the only three elements of a pitcher's game that they ain't control.
Right.
Okay. As batted ball variability kind of makes hits or things along those nature, you know, kind of questionable. It's a bouncing ball. You know, like we saw it last year with Aaron Cook a lot of grounders that just happen to find holes. You mm-hmm. know that Tulowitzki gets just about anything he can gobble on. You know, what exactly did Cook do wrong to give that bouncing ball an extra foot to the left to pass Tulowitzki's diving glove? Things of that nature that FIP denies any responsibility to the pitcher. So okay. what they essentially do is FIP is scaled to a runs against, or I believe it's ERA now, but you can convert that easily into what their expected runs against would be based on how many innings they've pitched and, you know, strikeouts, walks, home runs. And then they take that into account, and then the park effects, the run environment you play in, meaning, you know, do you playing, run environment just kind of means what park you play in. That's a easy way to put that. So they adjust for that, and then they give you a wins above replacement based on how many runs you were worth. Whereas on the other side of it, so Fangraphs starts at the bottom and says, okay, here's pitcher stats, and they build it up to WAR. What Baseball Reference does is they just take your raw runs against numbers. They don't care about earned run average, because really, earned run average hasn't really been a relevant thing for about 80 years now. Maybe a little less than that, but we really should be looking at runs average, just regular runs against. I understand that errors are kind of an important thing, but if you let in 5 runs after the error that on 2 outs that would have ended the inning, so now every run after that is unearned, and you let in like 5 more runs, are those really all unearned runs? I mean, yes, technically by the rules, but you know, come on. Fielders have been competent now for a long time. They put in the ERA metric there to basically take the blame off pitchers when their fielders are committing 6, 7, 8, 10 errors a game on average. So what FanGraphs or Baseball Reference does is it really just takes the runs against that the pitcher was charged for and then makes adjustments based on the total zone defensive metric, which gives a run valuation to each fielder on the field. So what that does then is just basically how many runs crossed on your watch while you were on the mound, subtract off or even add in how much blame or credit the defense gets, and then convert that into wins. And for those of you wondering, the thought is that a win is worth about 10 runs. So there's that. Anyhow, when it comes to Hamill, it's really tough to try to decide which one is worth or is better worth better. I can't seem to put a thought together. Which one is worth the evaluation? Is it the fielding independent based wins above replacement, or one that's based more on the actual results with a defensive adjustment? Well, I'm not 100% sure how I feel about either or about the total zone defensive metric. It's not a bad thing to look at, but I don't know how much I want to actually look at tying that directly into a pitcher results. But the thing is, a few of the independent numbers don't seem to give Hamill enough credit for the they don't enough blame for the problems he does cause, because we've seen too many instances where Hamill has the ever-feared bad inning where he will, get close to getting out of something, and then one little thing goes wrong, and then the gears just all come out of whack, and he just falls apart completely and has to get pulled, you know, an inning or two earlier than everyone is expecting. I lean more towards the Baseball Reference WAR, however, because it does appropriately blame him for those things while not overly excusing him based on good strikeout to walk ratios. If you look at the TRA metric, which is developed by the guys over at Baseball, I kind of get my thoughts together today, Greg.
No problem.
It's a Stat Corner. That's what I was looking for. StatCorner.com. They also write for USS Mariner, I believe. Or no. No, Graham writes for Lookout Landing. Dave Cameron writes for USS Mariner. I always got them mixed up there. But it's a metric designed to take into account every kind of event, basically, that happens. Whether it's a ground ball, whether it's a fly ball, line drive, strikeout, whatever. Assign those run and out values and then find an ERA or a runs against metric that should be based or that would correspond to. So in Jason Hamill's case, I mean, we see a 3.7 WAR according to FIP, which seems to be inflating his value a bit there. If we take a look at Stat Corner, their WAR, they rank him, actually, interesting enough, as 3.5 WAR with a 4.01 TRA. Now, I know this is kind of sounding like a completely foreign language to a lot of people out there, but when I say TRA, just a 4.01 TRA says that he was basically responsible for 4 runs crossing the plate every 9 innings, whether earned or unearned. That's just what he was responsible for. And in saying that, TRA takes into account batted ball data. And so that kind of fills in the gaps that we are missing with Jason Hamill. I think I don't necessarily want to hang my hat on a 3.5 figure right there, but if a metric that takes batted ball data into account and is less based on correlative effects, then I have a bit more faith in that form of measurement. Because when we look at something like wins above replacement, as it stands, the formulation seems to be an awful lot on Shoulda, woulda, coulda is the wrong way to put it, but it has to do more with what did the pitcher actually do, what was the pitcher actually responsible for, and less of what actually happened, which seems to be a bit backwards. But what a pitcher does, if a pitcher throws the perfect pitch, sometimes the guy still will bat it for a triple. And I don't know, it's a bit tricky to try to assign blame. Like, I mean, would it be a double if it was a slower batter? Would it be an out if you had a better left fielder? Things along those lines. Which do you really want to credit more to? I'm really rambling here. I'm sorry for that. It's such a sticky thing to kind of cover, especially with the guy like Hamill. I don't know. I would really just probably defer. I'm going to say the Fangraphs number ultimately, but not because I actually like the Fangraphs evaluation more, but because TRA seems to line up with it more. I personally think TRA is the best pitching metric out there, but I won't go any further into that. But to summarize all that, fielding independent pitching seems to make too many excuses for Hamill. Well, Baseball Reference, I'm not entirely sure. I think they're overcrediting defense for his batted ball data, while TRA seems to give a kind of a fair evaluation of both.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm very interested in learning more about these sorts of things. I'm not a statistician type, but at the same time, I do try to, analyze these sorts of things from as many angles as possible. And, you know, these are just the sorts of things I didn't know how different the formulas were for these, representations, which obviously are kind of designed to, give you the same, information with a completely different origin. And I think that it's interesting that there's not really a unification there yet on where or how the best results can come from. And you yourself seem to imply that neither of the representations for Hamill could be taken quite at face value because there were potential problems for both of them, being that one was giving him too much credit and one was throwing away potential positives because of defensive stuff, right? That was kind of your...
That was part of it. Fangraphs almost blamed him too little for his batted ball stuff, while Baseball Reference seemed to give too much credit to the defense behind him.
Okay, gotcha. I know that not everybody out there is into these sorts of things. If you were confused or so forth, I personally am still interested in looking into kind of taking some segments out of the show to use towards stats and maybe talking about certain ones and, you know, just trying to broaden people's understandings of them. But at the same time, we've discussed that, and we're not sure that it's necessarily the best idea for making an entertaining show that doesn't sound like a long, boring math lecture of some sort. So if you have any comments about that, go ahead and let us know. I'd be interested in doing it, but we're not going to do it if people don't like it. So there are a couple more questions I could get to, but we're already running long, so I think we're going to wrap there. Regards to guests... Next week, we're going to try to have a guest. Who is it? We don't know yet. We will, obviously, if we wind up with somebody, get that information out as quickly as possible. I'll announce it somewhere, maybe on the website or just in the post. But at the same time, we are not going to go off asking everybody in the world to be guests right away. We want to make sure that we get used to the system of having somebody on the show with us, and that we can get that to work and still be at least somewhat interesting to everybody. So we're not going to just rush straight into it. That said, if you, as always, any comments or questions that you have for us, please submit them. We've been getting much better feedback lately from a few people on the blog through email and also through the comments. It's better than it was last year, but we still want to make sure that we're getting regular feedback. So trust me, if you have anything you want to ask or to discuss or have us discuss on the show, just post a comment on Purple Row or on purplerowradio.com, where we have the blog and the RSS feed. Just drop us a line there, and we'll see about getting that stuff into the show, because we are always, especially during the spring, but it happens all year too, we're always desperate for more topics and knowing what other people are more interested in as compared to us, because sometimes we just will ramble on about the same things over and over again. So with that public service announcement out of the way, unless you have anything else to talk about, I think we're done.
I think I'm done there.
All right. Well, lots of talk about wins above replacement and lots of talk about hot and cold players and so forth. Let us know what you think, and we'll be back next week, hopefully with somebody else to provide some extra flavor to the show, but we'll see. Anyway, we'll see you next week. Take care.